All right, well, thank you. That was your break, by the way, so hope you enjoyed it. And thanks to Brian and your great organization for inviting me to speak. I have a lot of respect for Brian and Lars and all of you for what you do and the great relationship that we have together. You know, not long ago, a woman came to see her doctor, and she looked very worried and strung out and disheveled, and she walked in and she said, "Doctor, I got up this morning, I looked at myself in the mirror, and I noticed that my hair was frazzled, it was all in a mess, my skin was wrinkled, my eyes were puffy and red and bloodshot, my skin had a yellow color to it, and I looked almost like a corpse. What's wrong with me?" The doctor looked for a minute and examined her, and he came back and he said, "Well, I can tell you one thing, there's nothing wrong with your eyesight." And, you know, that's the kind of situation we have with the corn crop this year. It's ugly no matter how we look at it, how we study it, how we analyze it. We can go back and forth, but it is really ugly. What I want to do today is just talk a little bit about that situation that we have, talk to you a little bit about looking beyond that. There's things that are going to change, and really about how we need to keep our eye on the horizon, because this too shall pass, and it'll be past us. If you look at this slide, you might remember about 8 or 9, 10 weeks ago, we were here talking about a record corn crop. We were worried about low corn prices because of a record crop. We were even talking about maybe 15 billion bushels. You can see we had tremendous planting progress. It was much better than the five-year average, much better than it was the year before. And then the Sahara Desert came to Illinois and Iowa and the rest of the country, and things changed pretty dramatically. If you look at this slide, you can see this is from Pro Exporter. They have USDA's yields and theirs. You see pretty dramatic reduction in yield forecast week by week as this went along. This crop has continued to deteriorate. It's been a very short-term, very dramatic change. And we talk about volatility and change. This has happened over a very, very short time period. Look at this. This tracks the good to excellent. Back in clear in June 10th, we had 66% of the crop that was rated excellent, good or excellent, and only 8% that was rated poor or very poor, and you can see how quickly that changed. So we are in a very dynamic change in a short period of time. You've all seen these maps. I'm going to skip over them in the interest of time. But it's important as we look at this that we keep a perspective and keep a little bit of a sense of humor, because there's really nothing we can do about it. The villain is not you or us or the livestock industry or the secretary or EPA. It's the drought. Nothing we can do about that, and I think we need to keep that in mind. A couple key points I want to make to you, and I'll show you with these. These are a little difficult to look at, but these slides I'm showing are from Pro Export. I think they really share with you what we're going to face as we go forward this year. The circles there up in the upper Great Plains that are dark show areas of net export of corn. In other words, those are crop reporting districts and that are going to have surplus corn. The ones below that are blank are the ones that are negative, that are going to need to import. You can see that Minnesota, South Dakota are really going to have to subsidize the rest of the Corn Belt. It's a pretty dramatic change of events. This one shows the amount of corn fed for livestock use by a crop reporting district. So you can see where we're going to have the need. This one shows the industrial use. This is a lot of you folks. You can see it's basically in the same area. And again, I'll go back to these are the crop reporting districts that are going to be surplus, and the other ones that are in white are the ones that are going to be deficit. So it's pretty clear we're going to have a pretty dramatic time this fall, next year, until next summer, until we get another crop, something we haven't seen for a long, long time. This changes trading patterns, it changes basis, it changes all kinds of things. One of the things that's of concern also as you look at this blue is our yield trend line going back to 1970. You can see we've had a pretty tremendous yield trend until the last 3 years, and that's been our great story. Let's talk about the technology, how we've been harnessing that. We're producing more on each acre, and the red represents the deviation from the trend line. Now you have to look at this really carefully. The scale on your left-hand side is the percent deviation, and there's a 0% there. So on that red line, anything that's above zero is a positive deviation against trend, and anything below the zero is a negative. And you can see, generally, the last 10 years, we've been deviating above the trend line. The last 3 years, we've deviated below the trend line, and that's the first time that's happened in our history in corn production, that we've had 3 years in a row of deviation below the trend line. Now, I don't signal anything with that. That's just something we need to know. But it's important to see that we need to get back on the, on those trend line yields. And I'll skip this because this is based on the old report. But you know what's this? What causes with stress and pressure is infighting and unfortunately, and people pointing fingers and looking at each other. This is a statement that came from Chris Hurd, a Purdue ag economist, talking about, and I think making a great point, the drought is what caused the damage, not the government, not corn farmers, not the livestock industry, and we could add not the ethanol industry, it's Mother Nature. The issue then is this is a potentially disastrous for a number of people if we can take a broad perspective. How does agriculture get through this with the least damage to agriculture in the long run? And I think that's great advice, great counsel, and that's the perspective that we all need to take. Not pointing fingers, how do we work together to get through this? And he goes on, I won't read all this, but he talks about that we're probably looking at maybe back-to-back years where we might have the highest corn prices in history going into 2013. And if we get back to normal weather, we could go to perhaps low prices again because we could way overproduce. We could have the biggest change in production that we've ever had in our history as well. So we're set up for some really interesting dynamics the next few years. And again, we have to focus on this issue and what's going on, but I think it's important we not take our eye off the longer term, because things are going to be pretty dramatic. Well, the media is picking up on this. They're hyping it. Yesterday there was a report on CNN about how food prices were already rising because of corn prices. And that really irritates us because a lot of you are corn producers. And I'd like all of you to raise your hand and tell me how much, if you sold a lot of $8 corn. How many of you sold a lot of $8 corn? How many have sold some $6 corn? Yeah, $5 corn. You know, that's the deal. As we were coming into this year, you were thinking prices were going to go down because we had 96 million acres planted, and so a lot of you forward contracted. You priced your crop like it's a good, prudent thing to do. Very little corn will trade at $8, and yet that's what the media is jumping on. And there's absolutely no reason in the world why food prices should be going up now, and that's really irritating. We're very concerned about all the customers that we provide service to as the corn industry. You are one of our key customers, as is the livestock industry, as are exports, as are the domestic food industry. And all are suffering, and we need to recognize that. And it's important to keep that in perspective. One of the issues, again, one of the key points I want to leave you with you, another irritant that I have is this new media talk about how more corn is used for ethanol than for livestock. That's wrong. More corn is ground for ethanol, but more still is consumed for livestock. This chart shows last year's use. Feed and residual was 34%, 9% represented by distillers grain. If you add those two together, you're at 43%. Ethanol represents 28%. That dry distillers piece is not well recognized. You can flip it the other way and look at put distillers grains and ethanol together. But the point is, more of corn is consumed still by livestock than by ethanol. Even more dramatic, if you look at all the uses of corn in total, we used last year about 4.6 billion bushels for feed and residual. Ethanol displaced about 1.2 billion bushels. Excuse me, distiller's grains displaced about 1.2 billion bushels. Of our 1.6 billion bushels of exports, 1.3 billion of that goes for livestock feed overseas. So of our total corn crop, 7.1 billion bushels are estimated last year went for livestock feed, and about 3.8 billion went directly for ethanol. Now, whether that's good or bad is not the point. The point is, when the media says more corn goes for ethanol than for livestock feed, that's factually wrong, and we need to make that point clear. I'll skip this slide in the interest of time. I mentioned food prices, and what's the reality? What impact does corn have on food prices? Well, you heard the secretary say 12 cents out of every dollar goes to you, the farmer. The rest of it is broken out in processing, packaging, transportation, other things that you don't control. Even when corn is $8 a bushel, these prices are all based on $8 a bushel, a pound of beef, chicken, or turkey, 37 cents of that is corn, 51 cents for pork, 12 cents for a box of corn flakes, 13 cents for a liter, 2-liter bottle of soda, 57 cents a dozen eggs, and 26 cents out of a gallon of milk. So you double the price of corn from $4 to $8, you go theoretically from 6 cents to 12 cents in a box of cornflakes, and they raise it by a dollar at the retail level. It just doesn't make sense, and we need to make sure people understand these statistics. It's not corn that's driving up prices for ethanol. We've talked a little bit about the renewable fuel standard and some of the waiver and things. And I want to make clear you know where we stand as NCGA. We had some new talking points out this morning. These are ones from last week, but they're basically the same. You'll see them out in the press today that we updated. But we're very strong in our support of the renewable fuel standard. We think it's premature for a waiver until we have more information. Now, we had good information today. We'll have better information next month. We need to better understand where this crop is going. And we believe very strongly in the market, like the Secretary said. The market is the best way of allocating this scarce supply. We oppose any legislation to alter or repeal the RFS. We can continue to encourage those that are seeking to repeal the RFS to use the provisions that are already in there. Whether it's the flexibility of the RINs or the waiver petition process, use that before you look at trying to change it. Finally, we recognize that this drought is severe on all of our customers. Many of our members are in the same predicament as the livestock industry. Many have livestock. Many are investors in your ethanol plants. So we feel the pain. We feel the frustration. We feel being pulled in all different directions. And many of our farmers are suffering as well. Yes, they have crop insurance, but there are still costs. Crop insurance doesn't guarantee that they'll come out of this hole. It's time for all of agriculture to pull together and work for a solution. So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk a little longer down the road. I didn't ever realize that this quote we use all the time about this too shall pass away is attributed to Abraham Lincoln, but it is. It's something he said in 1839 and in a speech, and if you read that, it says that an Eastern monarch once charged his wise men to invent him a sentence to be ever in view, which should be true and appropriate in all times and all situations. They presented him the words, and this too shall pass. How much it expresses, how chastening in our hour of pride, how consoling in the depths of our affliction. So it's very appropriate, I think, we think about it, and this too shall pass. In May, we were talking about a record crop, low corn prices. We're in August, now we're talking about a really short crop and record high corn prices. Where will we be in another six weeks or another 6 months? Things change, they change rapidly. I think one of the things we have to keep in mind as we look at all this, we still are talking about an underlying challenge. We have an oil crisis going on, and I like the wisdom, you may have seen this, that Garfield had. Yes, we're low on oil. How did it happen? Well, no one bothered to check. That's because the oil is located in Iran and Iraq and Venezuela and in places far away in Saudi Arabia, and the dipsticks are in Washington. So. That's why we have an oil crisis. And of course, we know what the solution is. It's right below us, right below, and that's ethanol and other biofuels that can help us address this problem. Well, the National Corn Growers were involved right now in a visioning process. Some of you may remember that we did an effort about 6 years ago called 15 by 15 by 15. We projected we could be at a 15 billion bushel corn crop by 2015 and from that be producing 15 billion gallons of ethanol. At the time that we said that, people laughed at us. They thought that was ridiculous. We were producing about a 10 billion bushel crop. We were about 3 or 4 billion gallons of ethanol. But we saw the productive capability of farmers in your industry, and you responded, we responded, and we're very close to achieving that. We're now looking out to 2020 to see what we think our industry might be able to do by the year 2020. As we look out on that horizon, we firmly believe that we will get back on that trend line yield and be back above, back to where we are with our corn yields. This is a projection out to 2020. You can see in the red, we're looking for a rebound next year and continue to see that increase. What does that mean in terms of carry out? We see a rebound to that as well. We believe strongly in American farmers and particularly corn farmers' ability to produce and respond and take advantage of the technology that we have out there. So we're still very optimistic, and that's why we want to keep our eye on the horizon. And, of course, we see a lessening in prices as we go forward, as well as we have more available. I want to talk about something else as we look out on the horizon. We're under a lot of pressure from a lot of people who don't understand farming and agriculture and ethanol about sustainability. One of the groups that we're very active in is called Field to Market, and it's a collaborative group of all these groups, people that represent farm groups, input providers, agribusiness, food company. You see Coca-Cola's on there, Kellogg's, and several reasonable environmental groups. And we all sat down together to figure out what is sustainability? How do we measure it? How do we do it objectively so that we can use this as a constructive tool instead of something to beat us over the head? You may recall that they released a report back in January that looked at five environmental resource indicators and went from 1987 to 2007. And the results were pretty good for corn. Over that time period, that 20-year time period, it showed that land use, the amount of corn to produce a bushel of corn, had gone down 37%, soil loss down 69%, irrigation, water per bushel down 27%, energy used to produce a bushel of corn down 37%, and greenhouse gas emissions per bushel down 30%. But a lot of critics said, well, that was an interesting time period, but you haven't looked at the ethanol boom time. Look at that. So a second report was done, and it was released last month, and I don't know whether you had a chance to see it, but it had, again, very sterling results. It looked at the period 1980 to 2011, and I'll skip through this and show you the summary there. So 1980 to 2011, just as good results, if not better. So we have a really good story to tell in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, energy, irrigation, soil loss, land use, five key indicators of sustainability of environmental impact. This was a peer-reviewed report done by land-grant colleges, so it cannot be called into question. There was a piece that was added to it this time again because some of the critics say, well, you're not looking at socioeconomic indicators. And so this last five-year period it looked and it said, yep, over that time period the debt-to-asset ratio for farms improved, returns over costs improved, the national growth rate towards GDP improved. The number of work-related injuries went down 57% or 55%. The number of days lost to work went down 76%. Fatalities decreased 32%. And the time it takes to produce a bushel of corn decreased by 75% or per acre 59%. What other industry in our nation can match those numbers and that record? It's a pretty good story. And it's one, again, why we need to keep our eye on the horizon and look at the great story that we have to tell and make sure people understand these things. Speaking of eye on a horizon, another quick story. There was a gentleman that's in this room, and I won't mention his name, was going through a midlife crisis, and he got upset with his wife, and he was sitting down with her, and in the heat of the conversation, he said, when I was young, I had a one-bedroom apartment, no car. I had a small black-and-white TV, but I was going out every night with a beautiful woman. His wife responded to, well, you go out with another beautiful woman now, and I'll make sure you go back to a black and white TV and a one-room apartment and no car. So perspective is everything, and we need to keep that perspective. You know that we have a lot of people that think they know more about what you're doing and what our farmers do than they do, and so it's important we keep working on these public perceptions, food safety, urban beliefs about factory farms, that there are no family farmers anymore, environmental rules, all those kinds of things. We're engaged in a number of programs that we are using to address the public. And I know you are as well. And I just bring this part to you because I want to encourage us. We're in a difficult time, but we need to keep our eye on the horizon and not give up on these programs. I think you all know about our engagement with American Ethanol. They've been a great partner in promoting ethanol. We have another effort we're doing called the Corn Farmers Coalition. And this is focused in D.C. We do this every summer to really tell folks in D.C. about what farmers are all about. And it's focused on family farmers. And we use these pictures of actually family farmers and their numbers. It's our fourth year. We spend over $1 million each year. Our checkoff states are supporting this effort. This year we got over 53 media impressions. If you see the bottom picture, we took over L'Enfant Plaza Metro Station for 2 weeks. Every advertisement in that metro station was about corn and corn farmers. We bought every one, and it had these kinds of ads there, and it was very dramatic and had a lot of impact. We also had ads in Politico, which is a newspaper that goes up on the Hill. We had radio ads, and we had a number of things that were going on. Again, telling the story of America's farmers and what they're doing and how they have the same values as all Americans. We're involved in another group called the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. There's more than 60 ag groups across the nation are engaged in that to tell our story at the consumer level. Common Ground is a program that we're involved in where we're trying to unleash the power of females in agriculture. You know, they're a great talent, sometimes much more articulate than the other gender, and do a very good job of speaking to their counterparts in suburban and urban areas. And so we have put together with the United Soybean Board a program to provide training and programs and opportunities, and this has been very, very successful too. Speak out. Talk about your family values. You're on a farm. You see these things being used. You see biotechnology. What does it mean to you? Why shouldn't they be upset about it? And I'll wrap up and tell you, from my perspective, it's dark, it's dreary. We have a terrible situation this year, something that in our worst nightmare we wouldn't have thought would have happened back in May and June, but this too shall pass. It'll be better. Things, we have tremendous trends and a lot of great things working for us. And so we think the future is going to be bright still. We'll get through this together by working with you and others. And we thank you very much for your time.